This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, I wonder you should ask me whether it is essential to keep the patient in ignorance of your own existence. That question, at least for the present phase of the struggle, has been answered for us by the High Command. Our policy, for the moment, is to conceal ourselves. Of course, this has not always been so. We are really faced with a cruel dilemma. When the humans disbelieve in our existence, we lose all the pleasing results of direct terrorism, and we make no magicians. On the other hand, when they believe in us, we cannot make them materialists and skeptics, at least not yet. I have great hopes that we shall learn in due time how to emotionalize and mythologize their science to such an extent that what is in effect a belief in us, though not under that name, will creep in while the human mind remains closed to belief in the enemy. The life force, the worship of sex, and some aspects of psychoanalysis may here prove useful. If once we can produce our perfect work, the materialist magician, the man not using but veritably worshipping what he vaguely calls forces while denying the existence of spirits, then the end of the war will be in sight. But in the meantime, we must obey our orders. I do not think you will have much difficulty in keeping the patient in the dark. The fact that devils are predominantly comic figures in the modern imagination will help you. If any faint suspicion of your existence begins to arise in his mind, suggest to him a picture of something in red tights, and persuade him that since he cannot believe in that, it is an old textbook method of confusing them, he cannot therefore believe in you. I had not forgotten my promise to consider whether we should make the patient an extreme patriot or an extreme pacifist. All extremes, except extreme devotion to the enemy, are to be encouraged. Not always, of course, but at this period. Some ages are lukewarm and complacent, and then it is our business to soothe them yet faster asleep. Other ages, of which the present is one, are unbalanced and prone to faction, and it is our business to inflame them. Any small coterie, bound together by some interest which other men dislike or ignore, tends to develop inside itself a hothouse mutual admiration, and towards the outer world, a great deal of pride and hatred, which is entertained without shame because the cause is its sponsor and it is thought to be impersonal. Even when the little group exists originally for the enemy's own purposes, this remains true. We want the church to be small, not only that fewer men may know the enemy, but also that those who do may acquire the uneasy intensity and the defensive self-righteousness of a secret society or a clique. The church herself is, of course, heavily defended, and we have never yet quite succeeded in giving her all the characteristics of a faction. But subordinate factions within her have often produced admirable results, from the parties of Paul and of Apollos at Corinth down to the high and low parties in the Church of England. If your patient can be induced to become a conscientious objector, automatically find himself one of a small, vocal, organized, and unpopular society, and the effects of this on one so new to Christianity will almost certainly be good, but only almost certain. Has he had serious doubts about the lawfulness of serving in a just war before this present war began? Is he a man of great physical courage? So great that he will have no half-conscious misgivings about the real motives of his pacifism. Can he, when nearest to honesty, no human is ever very near, feel fully convinced that he is actuated wholly by the desire to obey the enemy? If he is that sort of man, his pacifism will probably not do us much good, and the enemy will probably protect him from the usual consequences of belonging to a sect. Your best plan in that case would be to attempt a sudden, confused, emotional crisis from which he might emerge as an uneasy convert to patriotism. Such things can often be managed, but if he is the man I take him to be, try pacifism. But whichever he adopts, your main task will be the same. Let him begin by treating the patriotism or the pacifism as part of his religion. Then let him, under the influence of partisan spirit, come to regard it as the most important part. Then quietly and gradually nurse him onto the stage at which the religion becomes merely part of the cause, in which Christianity is valued chiefly because of the excellent arguments it can produce in favor of the British war effort or of pacifism. The attitude which you want to guard against is that in which temporal affairs are treated primarily as material for obedience. Once you have made the world an end and faith a means, you have almost won your man, and it makes very little difference what kind of worldly end he is pursuing, provided that meetings, pamphlets, policies, movements, causes, and crusades matter more to him than prayers and sacraments and charity. He is ours! And the more religious on those terms, the more securely ours. Oh, I could show you a pretty cage full down here. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
So welcome back to letter 7 of the Screwtape letters. Galen, this is one that there's so many lines in here that are just classic. And later in this letter, he says, to make the world an end and faith a means. Mm. And I think that ties into this whole letter. It starts out talking about the way demons, do we really want to be known to the humans, or do we stay hidden? And High Command said that we're to stay hidden. And then he says a great line, which is, I think, a nod to the references to the devil in the Bible in Genesis, and where Jesus is tempted by the devil as well. That it was revealed at that point. But other than that, conceal themselves, make themselves comic figures.
Yeah, he says, well, it's our policy, word from High Command, it's our policy at the moment that we conceal ourselves, you know, and whether or not as demonic. And it's interesting how it kind of shows the demonic realm is very strategic.
Yes.
That's
a great point.
Very, very calculated. I think there is a lot of chaos in the demonic realm, and I even think a lot of times there's infighting, but I think there's hierarchy, and I think they've got a plan.
Yes.
They know us better than we know ourselves, in a sense. They've been observing humanity for a long time, and they're really calculated in the way they go about things. But for the time being, conceal ourselves, not reveal.
And think about it. If you look at people's struggles, and you get three main ones, right? Sex, drugs and alcohol, intoxication, and
money, power.
Right, money and power, right? If people knew that there were real demons affecting and controlling that, they'd probably take a pause and say, wow, okay, this isn't just a failing in me that's driven by me, that there's external forces. And this isn't giving everybody a pass.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I think it is saying how that... Look, I believe in the demonic realm. I believe it works in amazing ways to destroy people. Like that's my own personal belief. And to say I've seen demons, I would have to say I have. Because you know, none of us are immune from attack. And I think the closer you get to a relationship with God, the more forceful the attacks become. And it will be like, you know, he used in the last letter, you know, throw a beautiful woman in front of him. And if your failing is lust and sex, it's I don't think you can exist in social media nowadays. And I've got a social media feed that has nothing to do with women, sex, or anything. And in the feed, there's always a voluptuous woman there.
Right, right.
And it's one of those things that that if the demons hide themselves, you will just think it's a failing in you. And then if it's just a failing in you, then you work on yourself rather than working through Jesus and working through God to help you fight that battle. Because I don't think Jesus sets us in a position to say, hey, you deal with the demons yourself. I'll get them later.
Right.
I think he's there to help. It's right. In the same way if your child came to you and said, you know, Dad, I'm being chased by someone, you'd say, I'm here to help.
Right. Not run faster or figure it out.
Right. Oh, yeah, run faster than the slowest camper, right? Whatever that, you know. And so that demonic side of for people listening, if you've got something in your life that you're having trouble getting rid of, whether, as I say, one of those big three things we mentioned, start thinking about patterns, start thinking about how and when you're being attacked. Because it generally happens when you're at your most vulnerable.
Sure. You know? Oh, 100%. Because again, he knows how we're wired.
Yes.
And they, you know, I feel like I learn a lot of things in life by trial and error. And it's like I'm constantly making a ton of mistakes and learning from my mistakes. The enemy's kind of past that season. You know, like our encounter with the demonic, when they're trying to manipulate us, they kind of already have the game down at this point. And I'm nothing special.
They're singularly focused. Yeah,
singularly focused, exactly. And they're pretty well experienced. So understanding how there are cycles, there are things that they're common pitfalls, things that are common to man and things that each of us uniquely have common to us. But I think really this chapter does give us a good opportunity to stop and ask. I think you can err on one side or the other. A lot of people tend to underemphasize the demonic. I think we've probably talked about this at some point. And just live in the rational and just live in the natural and just hey, if I have issues, it's just because of me. And I think people can also err on the opposite side, and where there's a demon behind everything and almost using it as an excuse or a pass and, you know, casting a demon out of the...
That's great, because I think that plays into these extremes that we talk about within this letter as well.
Yeah, because he said it, remember, he said in the last episode, he said extremes in either direction, unless it's extreme, you know...
patriotism or extreme pacifism,
right, you know, any extreme is good as long as it's not extreme allegiance to the Lord, you know.
Yeah, right, extreme devotion. So, you know, talking about the devil's side, he uses the term direct terrorism. And the way we understand direct terrorism in our life, it is exactly that. It's they are going after you to destroy you. It's your battle is now is to say, what is it, these things that are destroying me, what is bringing me down, and how can I fight back against them? And he talks about things like, make it the worship of sex. Right? Because if you all of a sudden like, are worshipping things like sex or worshipping things like money, they're winning the battle. Those in there also talking about how, you know, try and make people
and he uses the term materialist magicians, where they believe instead of it being a demonic force, it's something that's just all magical, or it's just something that's happening within the world that I may have an influence on, may not have an influence on. And it takes people away from, one, being responsible, but two, calling on the Lord for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with that magical thing, I think it's so... A lot of people try to explain what happens in the world, what happens in their lives, what happens... You know, try to explain natural phenomenon with rational explanations. And it's so interesting to see how, like... I feel like the more science discovers, the more they end up catching up with the Bible.
Right.
But so often people can... Because they can have an explanation for something, can dismiss the spiritual realm and completely overlook the importance of it.
And it's interesting, because I've known over the years a lot of people who are into things like tarot cards, you know, Ouija boards and things like that, and they believe in the spiritual realm, but they don't believe in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, that's kind of an interesting dichotomy, right?
Oh, but it's funny you say it. That's exactly the point he's talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it would be great if we could somehow reveal ourselves and have them believe in the demonic without really acknowledging or focusing too much on the Lord. And it happens. There's a whole world of that out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then he sort of uses a term, and this is a question for you. He uses the term for the church as her. He uses the feminine for the church. And, you know, there's that line in the Bible, the bride waiting for her groom. Jesus being the groom, the church being the bride.
Yeah, with the bride of Christ.
Yeah, right. What's interesting about that is how, and I think it's commonplace around both, through all denominations of Christianity, is how masculine or how feminine is the church. But it's interesting that they use the term her in here. And again, bride and groom is the way we talk about it.
Yeah, the relationship with, you know, Christ and his people. We are the bride of Christ.
Right.
You know, it's probably not the average dude's favorite analogy, but it's one Paul used.
It is, right?
You know, and one day it talks in Revelation, the marriage supper of the Lamb, when Jesus and his bride are united. And it's also the illustration for marriage. So a husband is designed, it's really unpacking our identity as people and as humans is really found in the fact that God has an eternal love for his people, and Jesus is going to come and sacrificially die for, provide for. He provided the life we couldn't live. He provided the death we deserve to die to redeem us and purchase us. That's the model for how a husband is supposed to care for his wife and his family.
Right.
So it is, you know, that imagery of we are the bride of Christ as the church, which does make us sound a little bit feminine, but we still have our identity as men in being the groom modeled after Jesus, who's the groom.
Right. You know? And I think he maybe tries within here to play into the whole idea of that you've got this man, he's being drafted, the demons are attacking him, they're trying to take someone who, if you read in the earlier letters, has become a Christian. Mm-hmm. So now it's their job, we got to separate this before he gets too attached.
Sure.
And so they're talking about how we've got to get him thinking about things, especially in and around the war, about like the lawfulness of a just war, because if he thinks it's a just war, he's probably more prone to actually fight and more prone to stand up than if he has an excuse of it being an unjust war. And so the demons are now talking about, okay, how do we separate him by making him an extreme? And they use the two ideas, an extreme patriot or an extreme pacifist, because they know if you have the extremes outside of the extremes of being devoted to God, you're probably at that point, one, you're going to be malleable and undefensible with their attacks, but two, they're going to flip the script and make it where instead of God first, it's going to be patriotism first.
Or whatever the thing is.
Right, or whatever the thing
exactly.
Is. Right.
Or pacifism first. And he says that it's something that happens slowly. So as you can get him to kind of go down one side or the other in terms of being an extreme, patriot. I'm zealous for my country. I'm zealous for my party. I'm zealous for my cause. Or pacifism. I'm zealous against the country. I'm zealous against the war.
Right.
You know, you almost think of it in modern day, the right and the left. You know, your extreme right wing people on the one side, and your extreme, you know,
that's
on the other
point.
It's a really, really similar overlay, but it doesn't happen instantly. He says it'll happen slowly over time. You'll get him to the extreme. And just like you said, the cause is becoming the thing that gets a lot of his attention. And before you know it, it actually becomes the God that sits above the faith.
Yes, because they talk about religion becoming part of his cause, whatever that cause du jour is.
Sure.
And I think we can look at in society today with, you know, people on, you know, let's call them MAGA people. I think there's enough of them who should question, is it God first or is it MAGA first?
Right.
And I think those that put God first and their beliefs under that, or their political beliefs under that, are probably on a good track.
Sure.
But if you flip the script on that, it's wrong.
And it happens easily. I mean, I feel like I know a lot of people who mean really well and would even say they put God first. But maybe that's a good takeaway. You know, inserted right here in the conversation. Really ask yourself: do you fall into one of those traps? And do we really? And if you desire to put God first, is something else accidentally sitting in the seat? Because I see it specifically with the MAGA thing.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of policy and all that stuff, like, I'm there, you know, 100%. But how often do we see people really taking the movement and turning it into?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a God.
It's an interesting question to ask in your own life with everything you do, with decisions you make. Am I putting God first in here? And I've asked friends, if your child, this he's robbed a bank, and he came to you and said, I robbed a bank. There's a test for you right there of, are you going to protect your child, his family? Are you going to do the right thing by God? Or are you going to do the right thing by self? Or what you consider the right thing by self, right?
Mm.
If you rape someone, are you going to protect him? Are you going to say, no, justice is more important than me protecting you?
Letting you off the hook.
Right. And I think the whole idea of putting God first in things, and for people living a Christian life where they want Jesus at the heart of it, that becomes a really big thing to do. So I'm not perfect with this by any stretch of the imagination, but when I look back on big decisions I've made, I think to myself, did I put Jesus first in them? And then as I got older, I started absolutely putting Jesus first and asking, is this something that, if I did, would be seen well by God? Because I know there's things I did in my 20s and maybe in my 30s that probably aren't seen well by God.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's the, again, it's not an excuse. It's probably influence from the dark side and just looking at the world from a me and the things that drive me world, rather than asking, is this the thing that God would want me to do?
Mm-hmm. You can get really easily caught up in the cause of the idea and put it above what is actually right and wrong.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. He talks about the fact that, you know, that different ages, some ages lean a little bit lukewarm. So you have maybe some eras of time or parts of history where the eras lean a little bit lukewarm and they're not as prone to faction. And then other times are a little bit more tumultuous and there's a lot more, you know, global tension and things like that. And I think the time of this writing and probably our time today, we're more so inclined towards factions.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think everyone would put themselves in some kind of box.
Yeah.
Like, even outside of their faith and their citizenship to a country,
mm-hmm.
they put themselves in that box first. Like, as you said, they'd probably be MAGA first.
Right.
Right. Or I'm extreme, like, left-wing first.
Right.
Rather than thinking about country. Now, people might say, well, that's more important in this world. I actually think it isn't, because I think if you put God first, you'll make better decisions within the faction you're in. And you'll also look at it where if you live in a neighborhood, your direct neighbors feel the effect of you a lot more than the people who live further away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So neighborhood, city, county, state, country, world. If you look at it and work within those concentric circles like we talked about in the last letter, and I look at, you know, family, friends, good friends, acquaintances in those concentric circles, because I think if I influence well in them, it has a better effect on the world, because I can't affect the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
I can just affect those that are closest to me
and around me, right.
Be a good example and be there to help people who are in need within those circles. So, yeah, that whole idea of really pushing people to see those extremes is covered brilliantly in here, and obviously he's doing it within the patriot or the pacifist.
Mm-hmm. But I love even how he unpacks how the church, that type of thinking happens within the church, and I think that's really ultimately like where you get denominations from as well.
You know,
he says, we want the church to be small, not only that fewer men may know the enemy, but also that those who do may acquire the uneasy intensity and defensive self-righteousness of a secret society or
a clique.
Right.
And then he also uses the word sect later on. So it's the whole idea of, yeah, instead of it being a whole, you've got to separate it.
Well, and when your thing that you're focusing on becomes the main thing, you end up losing sight of the main thing. And it happens a lot. Yeah, that's how you end up with a lot of denominations. And he talks about this is, you know, he says the church herself is, of course, heavily defended. And I love how he says, we have never yet quite succeeded in giving all her characteristics of a faction. In other words, they've successfully, it's almost like he said, we successfully created a lot of denominations, but we still can't quite break the church. We haven't, it's not completely like, you know, broken down to terrible factions, but they're pretty successful in doing it. He says it's a lot of it has produced very admirable results, and even cites Paul and of Apollos at Corinth down to the high and low parties of the Church of England. So you have all these, the domino breaks, and it's important to like stand up for things, but it's also important to remember what the main thing is.
Yes.
We use a really common illustration to take this idea in the church of like identifying what are the open-handed issues and what are the closed-handed issues. So like an open-handed issue is something that it's like, this is what I believe, but this isn't like, if you disagree with me, I'm not going to part ways with you.
Right.
And a closed-handed issue is like, in order to fellowship with you, in order to like go to the same church and you know, really engage in life with you, I can't budge on these things. And I think when we mix up, again, Satan's tactics are always trying to get things that belong in one category and put them in the other.
Like you say, like, crossing the wires.
Or crossing the wires in our brain, we said in a previous episode. Try to get something that belongs in the open-handed issue and sneak it over to the closed-handed issue. And try to keep things that belong in the closed-handed issue and put it in the open-handed issue. You know, things like the authority of Scripture, the deity of Jesus. You know, all these things that we should hold in the open-handed issue, we tend to, you know, the church gets loose on those, but then, hey, well, you know, you got to do worship exactly this way, and your church governance needs to look exactly like this, you know, with all these factions. So all these things are important, and your, you know, extreme patriotism or pacifism, these conversations are important, but keeping the main thing is easier said than done,
right.
I'd say.
Now, I grew up in the era of the IRA in Northern Ireland. To think that people were willing to kill each other, blow each other up, over the idea of fighting about, I think the Pope's the head of the church and you don't, is in essence what it's about. So I believe the unionists, I believe it's like, you know, the king's the head of the church. Really? You're going to blow each other up
over
that?
Kill each other over that? Like, yeah.
You know, that, and that's a brilliant work of the demonic.
To take up your cause to that extreme.
Right.
Yeah.
The people who believe so much about faith and are so closely, they probably don't even know, but are so closely actually aligned, but yet the demonic uses that one little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And people might say, it's not a little thing, Ian, it's like huge. I don't think it's huge. It's a little thing. People with similar ideas of faith that are all of a sudden at war with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's crazy. And I think that's what the whole idea of playing in not playing into the hands of the demonic with that, but being willing to, like you said, open hand or closed handed issues to understand, really, we're going to fight over that?
Right. And I really, really think it's been used of the demonic in a really heavy way. So this is actually how Mormonism began. The whole point of it is that the Mormon church started because they looked at the landscape of Christianity and said, there's so many denominations and they disagree on all these things. What happened to the real truth? Why can't we discover whether you get baptized this way or that way?
Right.
Or whether there's, you know, God chose this people or let them choose. Or, well, all these issues and all these, the Lutherans and all these groups. So they actually used the narrative to say, like, the church just was a disaster, and it was like a broken piece of glass. It was shattered, and the truth that God had for his people, that Jesus tried to institute, was gone, and the true church was lost. And Joseph Smith came and actually reestablished the true church, and it's just something that is so specifically created because it tried to exploit all the factions that are created in Christianity. And I love having the discussions. I love the fact that there are different stripes of Christianities that disagree on different things, but it becomes something that is used against us in a really strong way.
Right. And then causes and crusades matter more than prayers, sacraments, and charity.
Mm.
That's what makes them ours. And I think it's right, because I think when people make everything in their life a world-based cause or crusade, whatever it is, and lose the sight of that relationship with God, yeah, religion becomes secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that happens and that relationship with God becomes secondary, it's no wonder that, and what was the line he said? We've got a whole, like, cage full of them down here.
I can show you a pretty cage full down here.
Yeah.
Of all these people that have been slowly duped into allowing their cause to become their God.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's brilliant. It's, this is one of those that is coming off six. I love the way he goes into this one, because I think that there must have been a breath that C.S. Lewis took once the war started raging in Europe and he started seeing, you know, people he knew being drafted, that he then came back to focus on this, because this letter really says a lot, and actually it's, I think, very instructional on how you can help yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the idea of understanding that it's demonic forces at work in your world. They're trying to get you to focus on things that get you less focused on God. Because let's be honest, if you're focused on a cause, addressing those issues that you have, whether it's alcoholism, because of all the stress on you, you're not going to fix that. You're going to focus on fixing the cause.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's another good thing to point out. He actually says that new Christians are especially susceptible to this.
Absolutely.
You know, he says it's a lot easier for people who are newer to walking with Christ, that aren't as spiritually mature. You know, Paul talks on scripture. When you start, you're drinking milk, but then you got to move on to meat. And it's really easy to find some of the causes that might sound Christianese or might have a lot of, like, you know, appearance of virtue to become the main thing and displace Jesus at the center of your faith.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's it. That's our wrap for letter 7 of the Screwtape Letters.